Amen. Do invite you to turn in Matthew's Gospel, chapter 8. We have finally come to the conclusion of the Sermon on the Mount, and that addresses how the kingdom citizens are to live in this life. And as we come to Matthew 8 and 9, we see a new section that is structured around three pairings of 10 parables or 10 healings, miracles, and we see him healing and casting out demons. And the structure here even kind of echoes that of the Pentateuch with the 10 plagues, and we see there God's power and might and authority and judgment. And in these miracles, we see his power, authority, and might in reversing the curse. And it is our prayer that we behold Christ the King. So our reading tonight will be Matthew 8, verses 1 through 17. Let us hear the word of the Lord. When he came down from the mountain, great crowds followed him. And behold, a leper came to him and knelt before him, saying, "Lord, if you will, you can make me clean." And Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him, saying, "I will, be clean." And immediately his leprosy was cleansed. And Jesus said to him, "See that you say nothing to anyone, but go, show yourself to the priest and offer the gift that Moses commanded for a proof to them." When he had entered Capernaum, a centurion came forward to him, appealing to him, "Lord, my servant is lying paralyzed at home, suffering terribly." And he said to him, "I will come and heal him." But the centurion replied, "Lord, I am not worthy to have you come under my roof, but only say the word, and my servant will be healed. For I too am a man under authority, with soldiers under me. And I say to one, go, and he goes, and to another, come, and he comes, and to my servant, do this, and he does it." When Jesus heard this, he marveled and said to those who followed him, "Truly I tell you, with no one in Israel have I found such faith. I tell you, many will come from east and west and recline at table with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven, while the sons of the kingdom will be thrown into outer darkness. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." And to the centurion Jesus said, "Go, let it be done for you as you have believed." And thy servant was healed at the very moment. And when Jesus entered Peter's house, he saw his mother-in-law lying sick with a fever. He touched her hand, and the fever left her, and she rose and began to serve him. That evening they brought to him many who were oppressed by demons, and he cast out the spirits with a word and healed all who were sick. This was to fulfill what was spoken by the prophet Isaiah, "He took our illnesses and bore our diseases." The Lord will bless the reading of his word. We come to this section in Matthew, and you will notice a regular pattern in Matthew's gospel where he will make particular claims about Jesus or show certain actions that Jesus makes. And then at the very end, he will say, "And this was done in order to fulfill all righteousness," or a prophet, and then he quotes them here. And tonight we have this reference to Isaiah 53, and this was without any collusion from this morning, but there is an emphasis today on the servant songs from Isaiah. And we have here a quotation, a fulfillment of what is probably the most familiar of all the servant songs, that of Isaiah 53. And there is a connection here with what we see Jesus doing in healing these particular individuals, and then what Isaiah 53 is all about. And we see these three individuals, and each are instructive. And we're not going to go in great detail in all three of them, but I want to show them in what they communicate as a collective unit. You have the first one, the first four verses, the leper. And this one relies on the background of Leviticus, particularly Leviticus 13, and the laws of uncleanness as they relate to leprosy. And then in the centurion's servant, you have in verses 5 through 13 an allusion to Psalm 107, where Jesus says that there are those who come from the east and the west to show that Jesus is the Redeemer, not just of Israel, but of all peoples. And then in verses 14 and 15, you have Peter's mother-in-law, who with her fever was unclean and was an outcast. And you have an allusion here to Psalm 147, which says, "The Lord comes to build up Jerusalem and gather the outcast of Israel." So with each particular individual, there is an allusion to the Old Testament. But then as they all come together at the end, Matthew says that Jesus goes out and begins to cast out demons and to heal many, and all that came to him were healed. And then he says, "And this was done in order to fulfill what the prophet Isaiah said, that he took our illnesses and bore our diseases." And so you will recognize this. And I want to emphasize this backdrop of the Old Testament, because we really can't see the beauty of what Matthew's doing in presenting Jesus here. And if I could illustrate it maybe this way, for the boys and girls, there were in the 17th century, the Dutch masters, the painters, and they would not go to their canvas and just begin painting with bright colors. They would begin with a sketch, and this sketch would be maybe a rough outline of the shapes that were going to be painted. And then the second stage would be where they would start maybe coloring in some of the subtleties of their sketch, and you could see maybe more clearly something that was not so evident there before. And then the third and final stage, they would bring all of the other colors, and you would have a masterpiece. But you have all of those layers, but what was there in the first step, that sketch, was the same in substance that was there later. It just, in that third stage, it becomes so bright and beautiful and evident. And Matthew is setting his story like that. You have the book of Moses, as it were, and that's that first sketch, that drawing, and you can see rough outlines. You can see that God is going to redeem his people, and it's going to be from the seed of the woman, but you don't know a lot of details. But then he's going to go on, and maybe through all of the rituals of Leviticus, you see a little bit of something that the Redeemer is going to do and the need that is before us. But as you go further in the Old Testament with the prophets, like the servant songs, you see the prophets under inspiration coloring in some of those sketches with a little more brightness. You see a little more light. And then Jesus appears. And we're not left wondering, is this some random miracle wonder worker? No, this is, as Matthew displays for us in words, this is the masterpiece of God's redemption. This is the final revelation, the fullness of the revelation of God. And Matthew wants us to see this one who's walking around healing many. This is the long-awaited Messiah. This is the long-awaited King. And so we don't want to look at the events that Jesus is doing and then kind of see, well, we've got to tie it in somehow, and so we'll just pick a random Old Testament verse. No, this is all intentional, because bound up in those servant songs are the promise of a deliverer, someone who you will know has arrived when you see the lepers healed. You see the blind have their sight restored. You see the deaf have their hearing restored. Those who can't walk, they are now able to walk. The lame or have the strength to walk. And you see all of that. And Matthew wants you to see, he wants you to see, that's the King. This is the one who brings in the kingdom of God. And you want to know the kinds of people that he brings into the kingdom. He says, it's this kind of people. And so we want to emphasize and make note of how Matthew structures his story and what he wants us to see. And so tonight, I want to look at Jesus, the King who heals, from three different perspectives. One is the King who heals prophesied. Then the King who heals willingly and with mercy. And then the King who heals and those who have been healed love to serve him. There is something that the King does to people that radically change and transform their lives. But before we look at that directly, I do want to mention one particular thing about this section and this emphasis on healing and the atonement that is drawn to our attention in verse 17. And that is, there are some who have interpreted this as a promise that wherever there is sufficient faith, then there will always be physical healing. And if there's not physical healing, then it must be because there's insufficient faith. And that is not how the Bible speaks of this. We know that there are times that that God does still heal people. But what Matthew is doing here is he's showing to us not so much a promise of all physical healing, but that Jesus, in taking our infirmities, in taking our sorrows, he deals with the root, and that is our sin. And it is through that he brings healing. And also, it's a matter of time. It's a matter of time. There is going to be a day when all believers, both body and soul, will be completely free from any imperfection, completely free from any disease, any illness. And we await that day. And so what we see here is the power of the King coming into and showing this power. And you have this intrusion into the present time. But what Matthew is getting at really is twofold. One, he is giving us a nod into how Jesus will deal with our root issue. He is going to take our sins and our sorrows and our transgressions upon himself. And he is going to take all of the penalty, all of the wrath. And then all those who trust in him will know healing. But we also see, secondly, what Matthew's doing here structurally. There is a reason why there is an emphasis on physical healing. We don't want to go the other extreme and say, well, the physical doesn't matter, and then this passage means nothing. What we have here in each of these episodes is ritual uncleanness. It's ritual impurity, and we see how Jesus deals with it and what he does. And I pray that it will be an encouragement to you, because this is the King who has come to you. So first, the Jesus, the King who heals and who has prophesied, all of this is showing to us that Jesus is the long-awaited King. He took our illnesses, bore our diseases. He is the servant. He is the one whom God has chosen. He is the one that went down into the waters of baptism and came up, and the voice from heaven cries out, "This is my beloved Son in whom I'm well pleased." And then, you remember what Matthew says about that King, and we see now this power. He is immediately led into the wilderness to be tempted and to be tried of Satan for 40 days. And he goes in there, and where Adam and Eve were in a plush garden, where they were in, if you want to say, the best of circumstances, they fell and were exiled. But Jesus, he goes into the wilderness where there are wild beasts, and Satan engages him. And what does Jesus do? He overcomes the temptation. He overpowers Satan. And he then goes out and he spreads his gospel of the kingdom, doing what? Not only proclaiming the King has arrived, but demonstrating it by casting out demons, by showing that he has power. But not only does he have power over demons, He has power over diseases. He has power over all of the effects of life in a fallen world. And this is what the whole Old Testament is pointing to. This is what the whole Old Testament is directing our attention to. And so the point of the healings here is to witness to Jesus. They're all messianic in their character, and they leave no room for doubt that Jesus is indeed the Son of God. Now, many of you have read that wonderful epic, The Lord of the Rings, and there are clues throughout that story about the true identity of the king, and I'm not going to spoil that by giving you the name of the king so that you can have something to read over Christmas break, but there is one title in this book that describes something that we read here. And this king who is going to arrive is called the wielder of the sword reforged, victorious in battle, whose hands bring healing. And then there was a statement by someone who said, "Would that there were kings in Gondor, as there were once upon a time, they say, for it is said in old lore, the hands of the king are the hands of the healer, and so the rightful king could ever be known." And Jesus comes. And if you notice Jesus in his earthly ministry, in this public ministry, wherever he goes, there's healing. There's restoration. He turns all that is moving toward destruction back. He is the great reverse cursor. And you say, well, how far does this extent go? Well, I'm sure one of these Sundays in the next few weeks, we'll sing Joy to the World. And we sing, as far as the curse is found. Jesus reverses the curse as far as the curse is found. And so when we read this passage, we want to come to the conclusion and say, yes, here's Jesus. Wherever the hands of the king are, you have the hands of the healer. And we see secondly here, Jesus, the king who heals willingly and with mercy. We come to this first episode, that of a leper. Now this is, in this time, the most feared disease. This is a disease that ravages the skin. It changes the entire color, texture, and even the scent of the skin. And it was pervasive in the body, and it was incredibly contagious. And it would affect the nerves of the individual. It was just an absolute horrible disease. And not only that, but it meant that someone was unclean. And that might not be something simple or easy for us to embrace. We're not coming from this particular culture of cleanness and uncleanness. But if you were a leper in this day, you were obligated to say, anytime anyone approached you, to shout, "Unclean, unclean." And so then everyone who heard you, they then cross the street and they go by. You were ostracized. You were rejected. You were viewed to be just the offscouring of society. Again, there are a few things worse than suffering, but maybe one of them is being having to suffer alone, rejected, and completely an outcast, separated from the community. And again, there was shame bound up in this. But somehow, when Jesus comes down from the mountain from teaching and great crowds followed him, there is a brazen leper. That there was a leper who was courageous. And this leper goes right through the crowds and comes to Jesus and says, Lord, if you will, make me clean. And you see something of faith in this approach, the acknowledgement that this one that's before him is Lord, But also notice what he asks. He says, if you will. This is not, Lord, I've heard your teaching, and you teach as one who has great authority, and you seem pretty powerful. Are you able to cleanse? This leper knew that his only hope was in Jesus. What he's appealing to is the willingness. Look, if Jesus is able but not willing, you understand that's cruelty. But if he's willing and not able, that's just empty. But the leper comes and says, Lord, I know you're able. You're Lord. Will you? But notice not only the willingness of Jesus, but his mercy. Look, Jesus is the Son of God. He could have healed him in many ways. And we see in the Gospels that Jesus heals in many ways. But notice what he does. He touches him. Like, this is the one that for the entirety of his disease as a leper is unclean. He's an outcast. No one would come near him. But Jesus. Jesus extends his hand and touches him. Right, the mercy, the grace, the compassion. And what does Jesus say? He says, I will. Be clean. This is amazing. You understand that again, Leviticus is the background here. If anyone touches a leper, they too are unclean. But Jesus, he touches a leper not to abolish the law, but to fulfill it and to transcend it, to show that he can touch the unclean and he can make the unclean clean. He's able to reverse the curse. Such is the power, such is the holiness, such is the beauty and glory and majesty of Jesus that he can touch that leprous hand. And something changes. But it's not Jesus becoming unclean. It's the unclean becoming clean. And we see, secondly, the centurion's servant. And here we have another marginalized or unclean person. We have a Gentile. It says here we have a centurion, someone who was in the Roman army, who not only was viewed as unclean because of his ethnicity, but also abhorred because of his vocation. Here is a Gentile who is in the Roman army who is oppressing the people of God. And yet he comes to Jesus in remarkably in humility, not for himself, but for his servant. Again, you have a Roman soldier who has a place of authority, who is pleading on behalf of a servant who has no say in anything. And he comes to Jesus with his dilemma, and he says, Lord, my servant is paralyzed at home. And really, he doesn't even ask a question here. He's just telling Jesus, here is the issue. And what does Jesus say immediately? I'll come and heal him. I'll come and heal him. And we read there and we say, this is amazing. A Gentile comes to Jesus on behalf of someone else and he doesn't even get the question out. Jesus is ready and willing and able. He says, I'll come now. And the centurion says, no. No. Look, I am not worthy to have you come under my roof. And then he begins to explain his understanding of this. Look, I'm a place of authority. If I tell anybody do this, they do it. But you're Lord of all. And then he says, if you just say the word, he's healed. We see here the kind of disposition that appeals to the king. It's one of humility. It's one of no self-reliance. And Jesus does not look at him and say, "What in the world are you doing? You're a Gentile." No, he says this: "Truly, I tell you, no one in Israel have I found such faith." There's not many times that the gospel writers tell us that Jesus is amazed. But here we find him, he's speechless, as it were. He's marveling. Why? Because of the humble faith of the centurion. And he says, "I tell you, many will come from east and west and recline at table with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven." Who are those from the east and west? It's believing Gentiles. And they sit down with Abraham, Isaac, the patriarchs at the banquet feast that is so full that we could never begin to fully comprehend the lavishness of this banquet. And Jesus says, "Look, anyone who believes has a place at the table." Again, an outcast, abhorred by Israel. He's a Gentile. He's an oppressor. And Jesus says, "In my kingdom, you've got a place at the table." Who doesn't? The unbelieving Jews, the children of the kingdom, those who have grown up in this. And you say, there's hope here for us. And there's also something eternal at stake here. Look, those that trust in the king have a place at the table. Those that reject him, they're cast into outer darkness. Rejected. But Jesus says to the centurion, "Go, let it be done for you as you have believed." And in that very moment, his servant was healed. Then we have our third individual, Peter's mother-in-law. Here we have a sick woman with fever. At this time, the Jewish Second Temple Judaism rabbinic law said that you could not touch anyone with a fever. And then you have the place that women held in that particular time. Almost like a double whammy by gender and by illness. And what does Jesus do? He touches her. He touches her hand, and she's healed. You see the people that Jesus brings into his kingdom, those that the world considers to be outcasts, those that the world considers to be foolish, those that the world considers to be second class. And Jesus says, "In my kingdom, they all have a place at the table." And there's healing, and there's grace, and there's mercy, and there's compassion. An encouraging study in the Gospels is to see all the various places where the Gospel writer will make note that Jesus reaches out his hand and touches. And then the effect that that always brings. It's a touch of grace, it's a touch of mercy, it's a touch of power. If you notice here, whether it's the leper, whether it's Peter's mother-in-law, the moment that there is the touch, there's the effect. He has the authority to accomplish his will instantaneously. Such is the power of the king. And then third and finally, I want you to see Jesus the healer, the king his people love to serve. Notice here what Matthew records. Verse 15, "He touched her hand, and the fever left her, and she rose and began to serve him." Immediately, the effect of all those who have experienced the grace and the mercy and the compassion of Jesus, it's transforming. It is life-altering. It's radical. You see it with the leper, you see it with the centurion, you see it here, that immediately she begins to serve him. And it's not a heavy service. Remember, Jesus says, take my yoke upon you. My burden is light. This is the service of the King. This is the service that is fueled by gratitude for all that he has done for us. If I could again, in closing, return to the Lord of the Rings. When asked why the riders of Rohan would risk their lives in following the King down the paths of the dead, Eowyn responded, "They go only because they would not be parted from thee, because they love thee." And then Faramir, when he was healed from his sick bed, he says, "My Lord, you called me, I come. What does the King command? Who would lie idle when the King has returned?" When the King has come, and the King has touched you by grace, he has touched you with mercy and with compassion, how could we not serve him? This is the King who is acquainted with our sorrows, acquainted with our griefs. He bears them. He's a man of sorrows. He's ready and willing to heal all who come to him by faith. He's ready and willing to heal all who come to him in humble reliance. He comes with healing in his wings, with that hope that awaits us for the return of the King in his second coming, when we see him as he is and we become like him, again, in body and soul, and there are no more diseases, no more illnesses, no more transgressions, no more iniquities. Can you imagine what it is to go 5 minutes, not just without sin, but without even being tempted? We read this morning in Revelation 22, the kingdom in which Jesus brings all of us upon his return. And there is descriptions of beauty and majesty and glory there that we cannot even begin to fathom. What is it to live and dwell in a garden city where there's no sun or light? Because the Lamb is the light thereof. He is the center and the glory for all eternity. He is the one with whom we sit down with and we feast forevermore. No more pain, no more sin, no more temptation, nothing but an eternity of service. And it will not be bondage, it will all be joy. And we will all be looking at one another with astonishment and wonder, saying, how can we for all eternity be idle when the King has returned? And until then,